Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
There are still too many Republicans in Congress who have refused to listen to the voices of reason and compromise that are coming from outside of Washington. They continue to insist on protecting $100 billion worth of tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans at any cost.
How is Bali?
Even if it means reducing the deficit with deep cuts to things like education and
medical
research.
How is Bali?
Even if it means deep cuts in Medicare.
Lord of the Fries, how is Bali?
At this point, at least, they simply will not budge from that negotiation.
Hey, point the finger, blame everybody like a big baby.
That refusal continues to be the main stumbling block that has prevented Congress from reaching.
Yeah, right. And I'll get back on your plane and go to another vacation.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, lack of sleep.
Well, you just heard it with your own ears. The president, fresh back from his Bali vacation with his wife and mother-in-law, blame the Republicans who refuse to go along with more spending. What's intriguing is that Spain just kicked the socialists out after 7 years, a seven-year tyrannical rule of radical leftists who introduced every trick that Obama's trying to introduce in America. Even the Spanish kicked out the socialists and elected a right-wing government, call it conservative, right-wing, whatever you want to say, family values, any way you want to put it. Here in America, though, we're stuck as though we have fallen into a sandbar. As though we have fallen into a quicksand. Obama is like a man who was stuck in quicksand, trapped in the rhetoric of the 60s. Tax and spend, tax and spend, tax and spend, while living like a president. So today we find out that the so-called super committee could not come to a consensus. And I am glad, because there should be no super committee. That means that we lost our democracy. Whatever semblance we have of a representative democracy does not exist within a super committee. Where is it written in the Constitution that a super committee shall usurp the United States Congress, which consists of elected representatives? As flawed as it is a representative body in that regard. The super committee is not representative at all. And yet even this super committee, whatever you want to call it, could not come to a consensus on cutting debt. So Obama comes back and says the Republicans did it for daring to not go along with his socialist scheme of adding trillions of dollars of more debt. He won't cut a nickel out of Social Security, won't cut a nickel out of Medicare, won't cut a nickel out of the bloated propaganda institution called education. And believe me, I'm a product of the public school education. I did not go to private schools, as did Hillary Clinton's child. And I did not go to private schools, as do Obama's children. I went to public schools. So don't tell me I don't understand what it's like to be a poor man. I'm the son of an immigrant. But I also know what it is to balance a budget. I balance my own budget. And I never saw a guidebook that said the way you get yourself out of debt is by adding debt. Anyone see that anywhere? Has anyone found a guidebook that says the way to climb out of debt is to incur more debt? That's what Obama's recommending. So there it is. Also, a radical Muslim terrorist, a recent convert to Islam who had become infatuated with the Quran and became a maniacal anti-American, according to his mother, was arrested in New York City over the weekend. And yet, the Associated Press is reporting that the FBI declined to pursue the radical Muslim bomber in the New York City case, even though they knew what he was up to. This is a man who said he wanted to blow up set off a pipe bomb and kill individuals, people, cause human damage. And here's the FBI saying, no, there wasn't enough evidence here for us to do anything about it. And here's the New York City Police Department, which is more effective at stopping terrorism than the federal government. So what is going on in our country? Has the FBI become an extension of the ACLU under Obama? It's starting to look that way. It seems that the FBI has been completely warped by the ACLU and the people that Obama's put into the FBI ever since he took office. Take a look at their recruiting posters and see who they're culling for. Take a look at it. Now you'll see why the NYPD had to do the job they wouldn't do. Now, if you're a Ron Paul fan, many of you will say, well, he really wasn't guilty because he didn't kill anybody. I'm sorry. A police department is supposed to stop an attack before it occurs. They're not supposed to wait until people are strewn all over the ground. See, the ACLU says until there are body bags, we don't know whether he was a bad Muslim or a good Muslim. The NYPD said he was making a pipe bomb. He bought all the materials. He read a book on it. He was involved in jihad literature, so they intervened to stop him. The FBI says, but he really didn't kill anybody yet, therefore he's innocent until proven a terrorist. So let me tell you something. If we're going to play this game that the ACLU has imposed upon the FBI and DHS, we are finished as a nation. 1-800-449-8255. What else is in the news? In a landslide election over the weekend, Spain rejected socialism and elected a right-wing government. Now only 3% of all of Europe lives under a left-wing government. 3%. And here in America, we're occupied. We are occupied by a radical socialist government. Here in America, we've been occupied by a radical federal government. While Europe is turning its back on socialism, we see a president doubling down on his radical left-wingism. A Democratic congressman from Michigan has been accused of sexual abuse. He's a Democrat. Media is burying it. Why do they not talk about it? Because he's a Democrat. One of the street rats in the Occupy Wall Street movement has been arrested with a loaded gun. Now, what else do you want to talk about? It's all here today on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let's begin in WOR, New York City. Bob, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
I want to know why the mother-in-law is allowed on these trips and we're paying for it. I mean, we're used to him and the wife, but why the mother-in-law? How is that legal?
How are you, Mrs. Robinson? You know that she lives in the White House? Do you think it's odd that a mother-in-law lives in the White House? Have you ever heard of this in your life, ever?
Never. And they get away with it?
Has there ever been a president who had a mother-in-law living in the White House? It is possible now. I'm not a presidential historian. There could be precedent for this. That unto itself is not a big deal. But that the mother-in-law is on every trip with them is a little disturbing. I understand that Obama is so cut off from the Democrat Party that the party elders want him to forego the next election and turn the reins over to Hillary Clinton. They are terrified he will destroy the Democrat Party, but more importantly, he will destroy the United States of America with his 1960s Ted Kennedy radicalism embedded in his brain. It's as though he's stuck in the 60s. Think of H. Rapp Brown in the presidency. Think of Stokely Carmichael from the 60s running the United States government. Because that's what you have. That's exactly what you have. It's just that he's a smoother operator. The Democrats understand what the polls are showing them. They see a disaster coming in 2012. But then on the other hand, here we see the Republicans committing Harry Caray with their idiotic debates every week. 2-3 debates, genuflecting in front of liberal commentators, looking like idiots, and so the people don't know which way to turn. So they turn to talk radio, they turn to some of their favorite columnists. They don't know what to do. They've never seen anything like this. 1-800-449-8255, MichaelSavage.com. What else is on your mind? Washington, D.C., Tom on WTNT. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. FBI and DHS. And I work for one of them, will never admit anything is anything other than a lone wolf psycho because the FBI is supposed to prevent terrorism along with DHS, which is supposed to help prevent it or mitigate it. They will never admit something is a terrorist threat or that it was a terrorist act. They'll always go for some psycho from a right-wing party or whatever.
Yeah, why? Is it because they're afraid of offending Muslims? Is that it?
No, they're supposed to prevent it. If they fail to prevent it, they're not going to attribute it to terrorism because they failed to prevent it.
Oh, you mean like this guy in New York who bought the pipe, bought the nails, was found with the wooden matches. He was cutting the tops off them for an igniter, bought the alarm clock, was communicating with Al-Qaeda, tried to go to Yemen. That wasn't enough for the FBI.
Well, I don't think it will be. They are busy covering their butt, and they're never going to call something terrorism because they are supposed to prevent these things. It's like
in other words, field agents probably report these things, and the upper management, which is as useful as the Department of Education, nullifies the field reports.
Say again?
Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Relied on a particularly notorious article called How to Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom. Pimentel followed instructions from Anwar el-Awlaki's Inspire magazine to first acquire the bomb-making materials and then assemble them.
Well, there was Mr. Kelly, the NYPD police chief, who stopped terrorism. Many of you don't understand that they're still out there. And the guy's own mother, he's a Muslim convert, of course. So far as I know, he didn't convert to Christianity and try to blow up America. He didn't convert to Hinduism, Buddhism, or Judaism. He converted to Islam, and he said he read the Quran, and he became radicalized. I mean, what do you want me to say to you? He read the Bible and became radicalized, as the ACLU would like you to believe? No, he read the Quran and became convinced he had to kill infidels. So what can I say to you? The AP reports that the FBI declined to pursue the radical Muslim bomber in New York City, even though they knew what he was up to, because he didn't kill anyone yet. They were waiting for the bomb to go off. The NYPD said we're not waiting for the bomb to go off. Mrs. Obama and Mrs. Dr. Biden, the first lady and the second lady, went to NASCAR to show that they're one of the regular God and gun kind of girls. God and guns. I don't know why they went to NASCAR. This is so opposite to who they are. I mean, they must hate NASCAR. They must hate guns and God. Anyway, they go to NASCAR, and as she makes the traditional gentleman start your engines call at the final NASCAR race of the season in Florida, of all places, she's booed. The White House puts a spin on it and says they were booing her. They weren't booing her. They were mad because they had to wait to get through the metal detector. This is the administration that we have today. Fresh back from Bali, she's booed at NASCAR. I guess NASCAR people are all racists. That's all. They must be racist. It can't be that they despise a woman like Michelle Obama, who is just such a loving first lady. Well, anyway, that's the story. What are you going to make of it? They shouldn't have gone there. They shouldn't have gone there. Frankly, I wonder why they did go there. Well, would you rather talk about Thanksgiving? How about talking about Thanksgiving? I don't know if anyone's listening. I think that most of the audience is gone. It's supposed to be broke, the country. Everyone's filling, the restaurants are full, the airports are jammed. Where's the broke? I don't understand the economy. How are we told everybody's told the country's broke, we're doomed, we're dead? In San Francisco, you can't get into restaurants. They're jammed. Where's the money coming from? Speaking of San Francisco, the police went in and cleaned out Occupy Santa Cruz, which is probably the most fetid of all places on earth. That's south of San Francisco by 50 or so miles, I guess. Filled with the most radical idiots the country has ever seen. And I don't know how to put it. It was in the newspaper, or rather it was on the internet. The police in Santa Cruz had to haul away several hundred pounds of human feces from Occupy San Diego, Santa Cruz. Can you believe this? I mean, this is such a classic story of spoiled, rotten children. You know, I told a story years ago of children raised under the Spock method, letting Johnny do anything he wants. And I even did a spoof on it years ago. Remember the parody I did where Johnny smears his waste product on the walls? And his father says, "Ooh, Johnny, what have you done?" And the mother says, "He's just expressing himself. It's modern art. Don't give him a complex. He's liable to be somehow hurt by you, even criticizing him." And that's what we have now. That's the country today. The big story is the debt panel failed. So what? What are you going to do about it? I think it's a good thing. Super committee deadlock is a victory, frankly, as far as I can tell. Maybe it'll go back to our elected representatives. But what are you going to say about that? What are you going to say, 999? It appears now that the select committee cannot figure out how to cut $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. I don't think it's such a failure. All they wanted, all Obama wanted, was a disastrous tax hike that would have destroyed our slight economic recovery. And given the bums in Washington even more money to throw away to destroy us even further. So the fact of the matter is, the only thing that protected the American people from this poorly timed draconian tax hike was the Democrats' unwillingness to bend on trying to screw the American people even further. The Republicans did the right thing. They rejected the big tax hikes because they said, no, we're not going to do it. In fact, the Republicans even offered some tax hikes. But the Demos said, no, that's not enough. We want more. It's amazing what's going on. I hope it goes back to Congress. Maybe we will become like Spain and we will live through the election and we'll put in a right-wing government. The problem is we don't have anyone in the right wing running. See, if we had a right-winger who was very rational and very telegenic running in this country, he could sweep the election. We don't have one. Everyone is afraid to say, I'm a conservative right-winger. I love borders, language, and culture. I believe in God. I believe in the Bible. I believe in family values. When have you last heard that? The milquetoast running on the Republican ticket refused to even acknowledge any of the principal issues that matter to us, the majority of the American people. That's the truth. New Orleans, George, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to point out that I believe the First Lady and the Second Lady went to the NASCAR event because they wanted to be booed. They wanted to be fodder for the upcoming election.
I don't think that they would noticeably want that because they immediately said it didn't happen. Their spin doctor said it didn't happen. They said the people were angry because they had to go through metal detectors. No politician wants to be booed. I disagree with that analysis. I've read it before, but Ken, I don't believe it's true. I honestly don't. Stay in line, Ken. I'm sending you a gift for the holidays because I know when you go out on Black Friday to buy Abuse of Power, it's liable to be gone. Stay in line. You're getting a free copy of Abuse of Power coming out to you this week. Sacramento, Norman, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm just trying to get your take on this pepper spray stuff over the weekend. I think it is a setup. Somebody made a setup there to get...
What, you mean the cop who sprayed the brats with pepper spray up at UC Davis?
Right, yes.
I think he treated them very fairly considering what they were doing and what they wanted to do. I think they're lucky to have get off with pepper spray.
Oh, well, those guys could have stepped over them anyway and got away from them. It wasn't a fact that they were...
I think they all should have been thrown into jail, frankly, for 30 days to clean up the streets. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, so, all right, everyone's mind is on cooking and shopping. The markets are full. I mean, I myself, the same thing. I mean, you start cooking more and eating more 2-3 days before the holidays. I did foolishly bought a hippie chicken, a normal chicken's, I don't know, 30 cents a pound. This hippie chicken was, God, no, $2 a pound, you know, raised on, it had a PhD in barnyard etiquette. It was fed on the most rarefied feed invented. It was taught to read at a very early age. So I made it last night. It was horrible. I tried just a roasted chicken with potatoes, and I used a very good cookbook. I won't even mention it. It didn't come out right. It was horrible. I'm going back to the supermarket chicken for $4.99. The problem is why I got fed up with the supermarket chickens that are pre-made. I bought three of them in the last 3 weeks. I usually buy one a week. I like them when they're hot. I'll eat a wing. I'll eat a leg. And the dog loves it when it's hot. It's juicy, right? They were missing a part of their legs. One of them had no wing. They're like defective chickens they're selling now. They're getting like chickens with like cancer where the FDA cut the wing off and sell it to some idiot out there. That's what they're doing now. I had a friend when I was a kid. His father was a small businessman. So he had a grocery store up in a poor neighborhood in New York at the time, a real minority neighborhood, poor, and he exploited them. The kid used to laugh and tell me that his father made a lot of money selling what was known as bruised chickens that were rejected by the regular markets. I said, what's a bruised chicken? He said, a bruised chicken is a chicken that like fell off a truck. It's damaged. You can't sell it in a regular store. It was rejected by the USDA. So his father would buy them and sell them at a regular price to the poor people. Most of the markets today are bypassing any inspections and they're selling bruised chickens. Cancer, take the wing off it. Cancer, take the leg off it and sell it. I swear to you. Speaking of chicken, chicken jerky treats linked to mystery illnesses, deaths in dogs. You hear this one? At least 70 dogs have been sickened so far this year after reportedly eating chicken jerky products imported from fill in the blank. Nebraska? No. China. That's up from 54 reports of illness, deaths in dogs, prompting a renewed warning for pet owners by the FDA. The FDA says they have not been able to find a cause for the illnesses. They can't find anything, but they know that the illnesses are related to the chicken jerky. Also sold as chicken tenders, chicken strips, or chicken treats. Now, I got to tell you this. Every time I go out with Teddy, people, oh, I had a cute dog. Can I give it a treat? No, never. No, you can't. That's like letting a stranger give your child a jelly apple on Halloween when you're not there with a razor blade in it. I don't know who these people are, even if they're well-meaning. I don't know what the treat is. Let's say it's not poison. Let's say it's just a dog treat. It's probably got sugar in it, which is bad for the dog. I never let anyone give the dog a treat. And they get insulted. Why do they assume my dog needs a dog treat? You see what it is? It's a control thing. It's manipulative. They don't really want to give the dog anything. It's their way of getting the dog to listen to them instead of listening to you. It's a control maniac. I wouldn't let anybody give a dog anything. Dog owners and vets are reporting that animals may be stricken with a range of illnesses within days or hours of eating chicken jerky, including kidney failure and Fanconi syndrome. I don't know how they get a Fanconi syndrome from a piece of bad chicken, a condition characterized by low glucose. Symptoms may include decreased appetite, decreased activity, vomiting, diarrhea, increased water consumption, increased urination. Sounds like the Occupy people. Listen to the symptoms of a dog that's been given bad jerky from China. Decreased appetite. Well, they're that way anyway, out of paranoia from the marijuana. Decreased activity from sitting on their butt in a cold. Vomiting, diarrhea. Increased water. Oh, yeah, they're all hydrating with water. That's the one thing that the hippie bums, they're always hydrating. And increased urination. Absolutely. If occupiers show any of these signs, stop feeding the animal the chicken jerky products, FDA official said. If signs are severe or persist for more than 24 hours, seek veterinary help for the Occupy people. Most occupiers have recovered, officials said. Occupiers' illnesses can be reported to the FDA's pet food complaint site. Sorry. Chicken jerky treats linked to mystery illnesses, deaths in dogs. Well, look, there's a truth to this. I don't let anyone give your dog a treat. That's all. End of story. Pittsburgh, PA. Donald, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, just Michael. I just wanted to thank you for making my ride home in the evening from work. I listen to talk radio every day, you know, through my job. And listening to you is just, you have a wide range of things you talk about. So you just don't talk about politics straight up.
Well, I started with the failure of the super committee, Obama coming back from Bali and blaming the Republicans instead of blaming himself. The fact that the socialists were roundly defeated in Spain after 7 years of a reign of terror by the socialists. A right-wing government took power in Spain. I talked about a lot of topics, and that's why it's interesting, I think.
Yeah, that's why I think you're if not the best talk show host around of all the
world. Well, I like to hear that. I think I am the best, truthfully. I try to be. I do seek excellence, I'll be honest with you. There's not a day I do the show that I don't seek an excellent broadcast. And I consider it a great gift of the freedom of speech, and I try to use it in such a way that it matters. To make a difference. I'm sending you a gift for the holidays. It's Abuse of Power, my best-selling novel. Very proud of it. I'm sure you'll enjoy reading it. 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WOR. John, what's on your mind, John?
He's right. You are the best talk show host around. I want to get that out of the way first.
Okay.
There was an article in the paper on Saturday, and it showed...
Oh, about them spraying the kids at UC Davis, the poor innocent occupiers?
Let me tell you, there wasn't one thing in that article that said what those pieces of crap were doing to the police for them to do that. All they showed was the pepper spray going into their eyes, but not to mention anything about what they were doing. And that aggravated
I saw the video of the cop giving him a good DDT. It looked like a DDT on insects.
That makes me sick. That really makes me sick. My brother's a police officer, and he spent a few days...
Well, you know, they put police in a situation, it's a no-win. That's what the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild, both subversive organizations, that if we had a real FBI, they'd be deported. The FBI should deport the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild. But they won't even acknowledge there's terrorism, so we're looking to the wrong... You know, who's going to watch the watchers? But the point is, how does a policeman do his job? How do they do their job? What do you want to do? Let these brats take over a city and defecate, urinate, block traffic because that's what they want to do?
And finally, Mayor Bloomberg showed some cojones and put an end to it, but, you know, too little too late.
It was only 2 months later. It only took him 2 months to get his act together. 2 months it took him. 2 months. 2 months he indulged the brats.
Ridiculous.
Did you read that one of them was found staying in a $700 a night hotel nearby?
Yes.
Could you believe it? The guy was on top of it. I think he worked in the financial industry. He was during the day, he was banging drums, smoking dope, laying in tents with as many girls as he could get his hands on, the idiot girls. And then at night, he was going to a $700 a night room. You hear this?
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I heard two liberals.
Well, the people had to put up with this. The people had to do it. John, a gift goes out to you, a copy of Abuse of Power. What do you want to talk about? Thanksgiving? I don't want to make a joke. If it's my favorite holiday. For the first time in many a year, thank God we're all going to be together. How many years do we have yet on Earth to begin with? You look at the moons. You look at the moon like the Indian. Remember the Indian movies when you were a kid? Many moons ago. Well, the Indians were right, if you think about it. Many moons ago. They measured everything in times of how many times the moon came around. The full moon is only 12 times a year. So if you live to 75, 80 years, how many moons do you have in your life? What am I talking about death and destruction for? Because it's everywhere. The teachings of Don Savage. Death stalks us all. The teachings of Don Savage. Wherever you are, death sits in the room with you. That's right. Now, you remember that book, The Teachings of Don Juan, in the 60s? That was pretty good, where it says death is with us all the time. Well, he's right. It's always there. It's a funny thing to talk about, because I was driving to the studio today on a country road, right? And I see a hawk drop out of the sky, like, I swear to God, like a rock. It didn't swoop. This one came straight down like a Harrier jump jet and grabbed a mouse running in a like a water runoff ditch. And I see the hawk come straight up like a Harrier and fly away with like a mouse or some kind of little field creature with straw on it. And I started to think, I know maybe I'm getting older or something. I said, you know, that mouse is like all of us humans. We think that we're this, we're that, we're immortal, we're bigger than God, you know, powerful, gonna be here forever, no one can stop him. You know, that whole thing of how great we are, wonderful, onward and upward, onward Christian soldiers, knowing the whole ego of man. And then I said, you know, in many ways, though, it's like God watches us and he can drop down on us like a hawk and pluck us anytime he wants. Do you believe that? Do you have that sense of reality that I do, that I live with? Does that make me a frightened person, a fearful person? Does that make me a realistic person? That sense of mortality. I've had it with me since I'm a kid. We had a lot of family tragedy in the family. I don't want to go into it. I'm not a victim. Every family has something in the family. Ours was particularly tragic. It hurt everybody. Everyone got damaged by it. It broke everyone's heart. The fact of the matter is, though, I think I would have been this way anyway. I think that the whole situation with my brother, God rest his soul, Jerome, I hope you're in heaven and mom's there with you, but I think it was a beneficial thing in my life. I hate to say that because it means he suffered for me, which makes me doubly guilty. Survivor children have a terrible time with guilt. And in those days, there was no such thing as psychology, except for the very rich. They went to Freud if they had sexual hysteria, you know, and he told them to take cocaine and get over it, you know what I mean? But the fact is, there was no such thing as daily therapy for everybody. Everyone has therapy, this, therapy, that. Crybabies in jail now. Every minute they go to another therapy session. They live very well. Sometimes people are jealous of the people in prison. They got friendship. They got therapy sessions. Every day they're told what great self-esteem they have, that the reason they raped that nun and burnt the children alive was not because they're inherently a piece of garbage who should have been executed. It's because they had bad self-esteem problems. That's the society we're living in. And see, Mr. Jones, the reason that you set those children on fire and killed their mother after raping her and beating the father to death was not because you're inherently a bad guy. You're a confused person, and you have bad self-esteem, but we're working on that here in the prison. Here's a video camera, make a movie. Here's a fake radio station in San Quentin. They have radio stations. Every day, therapy, gym, yoga, weightlifting. You hear a country like this, an insane nation. A crazy nation. But survivor children happen to have a guilt complex because they want to know why they were spared. And in those days, there was no therapy for the child who was spared what happened to the sibling, right? So the kid walks around for the rest of his life not knowing what he did wrong, that his brother or sister got hurt, and he didn't. I think therapy can be very helpful, incidentally, if you explain this to a child a few times. I don't think you need it for the rest of your life, nor do you need medication. The point I'm making is, I believe that the tragedies in families sometimes can be turned into a lemonade. The lemon can be turned into a lemonade. That's what I'm saying. You don't always have to walk around crushed by things that happen. They can turn you into a far better person, and you hope that that's what it's all about. What else are you going to do about it? 1-800-44, I don't know why I'm getting, it's the family thing. Well, what's the alternative? I know people who never got married, never had children. You know why? They were afraid. You know what courage it takes to be a father? Do you have any idea? I want to say this. The fathers in America are the least rewarded people in the United States of America. There is never a word that is put out saying congratulations to the American father. If I had my way, if I were the president, you know what I would do? I would thank the American families who are married and together. I wouldn't say, you know, the modern family. I mean, I have nothing against a single mother or a single dad. That happens. That's fine. God bless them. It's better than ditching the kid. But I'm talking about people who live together, stay together, and raise children. It doesn't matter to me whether it's one out of two anymore. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the norm. It's the way it's set up. It's the way God made it. It's the way nature made it. Just look at the animals and look at human beings. That is the way children are supposed to be raised. A mother and a father through thick and through thin. That's what the vow is all about. Don't assume that your whole marriage is supposed to be paradise. If you do, you're a fool. You should join the Occupy people, thinking that there's a paradisical society. The problem is that the fathers in this country are dumped upon. Everything is woman this, woman that, woman this, woman that. Poor mother, poor woman, poor mother, poor woman, poor mother, poor woman. How about the father? What are the stresses on a father? What are the stresses on a father? What is the greatness of a man who stays with his wife and children when he has every reason to run away out of fear or loathing or that he can't support them? How about those fathers? How come they're not given some kind of thanks in this society? And that's what I would do if I were president. I would thank the American family for being the brick of our society. That's right. The brick of society are not the vermin in the gutters who throw bricks. But the brick of our society, upon which the entire society is built, is the American family. The thing that made America great, the thing that keeps America great, and the thing that will make America great in the future. The American family, and not one candidate, not one Republican candidate who used to know or supposed to know or should know what family values are, has never mentioned the word family. So when I say to you, I'm Michael Savage. I've had an extremely successful career. I absolutely, if it ended tomorrow, which I hope it doesn't, I would have to say, God, it's been the greatest run I could ever imagine. Because I remember being a poor, unknown writer. And, you know, I'm going through all my old writings now. I can't believe some of the things I wrote 30, 40 years ago. And I'll get to that later about my friend's father's death and all of that, about Henry coming across. He had cancer. I'm going to get distracted now again. Should I tell you the Henry story? It's an incredible story. I didn't even know I wrote it from 1981, 82. But I'm going through all my writings to put them together for a publisher who wants all my early writings now. Guess that's a success. So let me go to the bigger picture. If it would end tomorrow, right, I would say, I'm a very successful broadcaster. I'm a very successful writer. The people love me. They love my books. And it's been great. It's an incredible run. It's like a long run of a show. 17, 16 years. I don't even know how long. 1994. I can't even do the math anymore. Whatever it is, in March 14th this year, it'll be a certain number of years, from 94 to 2012. Beowulf, do the math. I don't have a calculator in my head anymore. I drank too much coffee. But it's been a heck of a run, okay? But meanwhile, I'm going back and looking at the early years, the struggle years. No one knew me. I was writing experimental science fiction that will absolutely blow your minds. Wait till you see this stuff. I found a thing on that was written. I didn't even know I had written it in 1984. A piece of science fiction that my agent got. He could not believe it. It's so astonishing. But I also found a piece about my friend's father's death, which I have to tell you about the minute I come back.
Savage.
Officials have released a list on 93 complaints against the protesters. The complaints include drug and alcohol use, littering, and bathing in county bathrooms. Artwork has also been vandalized, but county officials can't link that to protesters. Now, the most shocking accusation is that officials found 200 pounds of human feces near the County Veterans Memorial Building, which is just across the street from, right across the bridge, excuse me, from the camp.
How many roads must a man
walk? If vermin, drug addicts. 200 pounds of human feces found near Occupy Santa Cruz. Vermin. 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 Rats. Human rats. And you're telling me that you have sympathy for them? Of course we know that there are crooks at the top in some places who should have been indicted. I can name 10 of them. I did in Trickle Up Poverty, but you didn't want to read the book. Instead, you want to listen to the people crapping in the street. Well, let me go back to the story for a minute. I'm going to get distracted. I have a minute and 30 seconds. I can't do it. I can only squeeze so much in such little time. I can't do it every day. I do have a minute. I could probably do it in a minute. Anyway, I have a friend. I used to know him. I haven't seen him in 30 years. And he was a World War II veteran. And I saved him from cancer. He was given up for dead at the VA hospital. They sent him home with a baseball-size growth underneath his arm. She said, go home and die, basically. I put him on Linus Pauling's program and maintained it for him. 3 months later, they dissolved. Okay, so he's a guy I knew. Now, he had slight Nazi sympathies. But I forgave him for it because we'd argue over it. And I said, you know what? Leave that part out of it. Aside from your insane politics, let's just talk about other things. So I ignored it. Lived in a little room somewhere. Wasn't a bad guy. Except when he got into that, you know, right, really, really far right Nazism. And I didn't go in that direction. Now, remember, he's a World War II veteran. Never bothered a soul. So I was telling him a story. I found this in one of my writings about my friend. We'll call him Barry. Not the, oh, they changed their name. Harry. My friend Harry. Harry had a father who survived Auschwitz. They cut three of his fingers off in a saw for fun. But his father never complained about it. One of the Nazis took the guy's hand and ran it through a saw, cut his fingers off. And this guy was a real man, this guy, his father. And he never complained about it the rest of his life. But he became very mean. Mean, but never complaining. I'll tell you more of the story in a minute.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This show is dedicated today to all of the fathers of the United States of America. It's not to denigrate the mothers, but I feel women have so many benefits in society ever since the women's movement. God bless them. The women have come a long way. They're in every position of power imaginable. 60% of all college attendees are women. The men have been driven into the ground in this country. And I want to dedicate this show today, just a moment, one nice word, for all the fathers in this country who have stood by their children, and more especially those fathers who have stood by their families, because you never get so much as a dog bone from the politicians nor from the media. Now, I want to talk about a few things that I started to touch on in the last hour. Here's one of them. John Corzine, former Goldman Sachs CEO. John Corzine, former governor of New Jersey. John Corzine created a company called MF Global. Now, the acronym stands for what these people have done to people. MF Global went bankrupt about 2 weeks ago. We learned today that not $600 million is missing, but $1.2 billion of customer funds are missing. Did you hear what I'm saying to you? The trustee overseeing MF Global Holdings wind down said today that more than $1.2 billion in customer funds is missing from the firm. More than double the original estimate of missing cash. Now, we all know about Madoff. Madoff's in jail. Why is Corzine not indicted? He knew nothing about the MPS created by this company. Here is a man who, in my estimation, ran New Jersey into the ground, gave sweetheart deals to unions, claimed executive privilege in his emails to his girlfriend, also the head of one of New Jersey's largest public unions. And now Corzine is overseeing a company that's bankrupt with $1.2 billion is missing from this company. How in the world did they get away with it? To me, MF Global was a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme. Bernie Madoff is in prison. Why is Corzine not being called on the carpet for this? Answer, he's a highly placed Democrat. He is protected. He has protexia. So I'm not sitting in the gutters of New York occupying Wall Street to say this. I am blessed with a radio show that reaches millions of people. I'm on powerhouse stations across the country, including in the heart of the monster, the New York City, WOR. It's right where Wall Street is. I'm on WTNT in Washington. This show is heard. This show is the number two in webcasting in the country. It doesn't matter whether I'm on David Letterman or not. I would never go on that show. Why Herman Cain went shows a lack of advice by his advisors. I wouldn't go near that bucktooth fraud. Wouldn't go near that bucktooth fraud. In all my life, I never watched his show. I've seen seconds of it, minutes of it. I know he's in love with himself. I wouldn't go near him. It's a setup. Any more than I go to Bill Maher's show. Why would I go into that idiot show? But the point I'm making is, how in the world does Corzine get away with this? Now I want to go back to something that I started in the last hour. I want to go back to something I started in the last hour. Do you remember what I was talking about when the show, the last hour, came to a conclusion? So I had a friend. He lived in a little hotel in San Francisco. World War II veteran, fought on ships, survived kamikaze attacks. He was a good guy, but he had Nazi sympathies. Not exactly was he a Nazi, but he had a kind of like grudging admiration for the German soldier, which, by the way, is not so unusual because the U.S. government did as well at that time. And so did General Patton, incidentally. But I don't want to go into that side note. I mean, it's just said that the Wehrmacht were not all Nazis. Yeah, all right, fine. Not all Nazis, all right. But nevertheless, I forgave him that because there were other aspects about him that I liked. So I was his friend. I hung out with him once in a while. I'd see him, chat with him. He lived basically in a teeny walk-up, like an SRO, on very little money. He lived like a American Zen master on almost no money a year. He had a little pension. He was a part-time this and he didn't. All right, so I found this in my archives. I wrote this story about my friend Harry's father, who was dying of cancer years later. So now this guy, who I don't know what to call him, I'll just say this guy. I'm in his room, and he's cooking a couple of sausages on a frying pan on a hot plate, like a two-burner hot plate. I go up there once in a while. I bring up some beer. That was then. I don't do this now. I'm talking many years ago. And we're chatting, looking down at the streets of San Francisco, and we're talking. And I'm telling him the story about my friend Harry's father, who was dying or just died of cancer, right? I just helped bury him. And he don't care. You know, he's a figure, what the heck, he's a guy. So I said, listen to me. His father survived Auschwitz, but he never complained about it. The Nazis cut three fingers off his hand in a saw. He worked in a wood shop. And one of the guards, one of the sadistic Nazi guards, took his hand and ran it through the saw, cut three fingers off. And the guy had stumps for three fingers. So I said he never complained about it. I said, but it made him a very angry man. And I said he beat his children, slapped his wife around. So that got the crypto-Nazis' attention. I think that's when he started to admire this guy, when he heard about the beating of the children and the wife. That he liked. So he listened carefully. So I said, now that I got your attention, let me tell you a little bit more about him. So he gets cancer, and the guy is suffering and he's dying. It was a pretty quick death, by the way. It wasn't a lingering one. And I go up to his house, and he says to me, Michael, 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 he says, do you remember 20 years ago you took me for a couple of drinks with my son Harry in Berkeley? We went out that night. I didn't remember it. He says, you know, that was the good times. He said, now these are the bad times. He said, that was the best night of my life. I was shocked. As I said to my friend, the crypto-Nazi, I said, do you understand what he was saying to me? I said, one kindness to a stranger turned out to be the best night of his life. I didn't even know it was such an important night to him. The man had nothing to live for. But one night I took him out for drinks that he remembered his whole life. So the way the story ends, as Harry told it to me years later, is that his father was sick and suffering and laying in bed, moaning. And he gets up and he says to his son, Harry, Harry, he's here for me. And the kid says, he's a grown man. He says, well, who's here for you? He says, the angel of death is in the room. He's right behind you. And Harry says, Pop, there's nobody here. He says, he's right there. There he is. And the guy gets up. He walks across the room and he drops to the floor and he's dead. So what are you going to do? You're going to laugh at people who see these things? You're going to laugh at every religious person on earth because you're a pothead who watches that putz on television? These anti-religious schmucks? You know, get back to me when they're in their deathbed. All these wise guys from Sunset Boulevard. Get back to me when they open their big mouth, see what God says to them for a whole lifetime of mocking God. This is a time to embrace God. A time like this in America is a time to double down on embracing religion, embracing God. I didn't tell you you have to go there and do the whole mumbo jumbo if you don't want to. But let me tell you something. As a wanderer once said to me when I asked him, do you believe in God? He looked at me like I was crazy and he said to me, I didn't create myself. That was his answer. It was enough for him. It's called faith, schmuck. Now, you could have cynicism all you want and think you're smart because you're a cynic. But what you don't understand is cynicism is only one philosophy. It's not the be-all and end-all of all philosophies. Write that one down. You haven't read it anywhere. You turn on MSNBC, you see these snot noses like they're still in college. Every statement is double irony. You know, blah, blah, blah. Everything is a double ironic statement like that's a mark of intelligence. That's not intelligence. It's just childishness to be doubly ironic with everything and think that you're clever with your girlfriends in a sorority house. Very easy to be doubly ironic. Try satire for a day and see how that is. Satire is a lost art, by the way. No one knows how to do satire. They can do irony. They could do ridicule, but they can't do satire. It's a whole different form of comedy, but I'm getting off the point. What's not a comedy is MF Global says $1.2 billion is missing, and John Corzine is missing at the same time. And the Super Committee has to fold up shop today, and Obama comes back from his latest vacation, and he says, it's the Republicans' fault. Once again, the spoiled president, the spoiled child president points his fingers. Instead of saying, I hear you, we can't raise taxes to balance the budget. We have to cut Medicare, Medicaid. We have to cut all the things that are the golden pheasants to the Democrat Party. We have to do something here. He didn't say that. Instead, he said tax, 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 tax. And by the way, I'm splitting for another vacation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
It is the Savage Nation. Used to be one of my favorite songs when I was a college-age kid. I wasn't busy sitting in the streets defecating in the backyard of the college campus. I think I was working two jobs and trying to do the best I could to get through college, as a matter of fact. But that's a difference in values, isn't it? I was raised by two hardworking parents, both immigrants. And I was man-child in the promised land, and I knew what was required of me and expected of me. I didn't always live up to it. I still don't. Meanwhile, I knew what I was supposed to do. And now you have a generation. I wouldn't say it's a generation. You have a bunch of bums sitting around banging drums like the world owes them a living, in plain English. And the most of America, by the way, the only good news about the bums in the streets of America is that it backfired on the Democrat Party. This is the greatest black eye for the Democrat Party in my lifetime, because everybody knows they're behind it. I mean, you ask the average person, what were they doing in the gutters? The answer is they were bothering me. They were blocking me from going to work. They're blocking me from going to a hospital. They're a bunch of lazy, dirty bums. It took Bloomberg 2 months to do something about them. They would have liked it done in 2 minutes. This is, don't confuse the two things. There's a difference between freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and bothering people to make sure they have no freedom of speech and no freedom of assembly. It's called agitation. And it's a way they teach them. There's a group in Berkeley or Oakland, a bunch of old communist bums. J. Edgar Hoover's day, they would have been arrested for sedition. They actually run a thing called Ruckus Camp, where they teach these spoiled brats how to tie up traffic, how to tie up bridges, how to make people crazy, how to lock their arms together in plastic tubes, that kind of thing. Taught by a group of seditious bums, old-timers. This is intergenerational communist agitation. So the average person knows this, and they know the Democrats were behind it. I don't mean the man in the street may not know anything. They don't like these kids for, you know, tying them up. But if you trace the money, Soros, organization, Tides Foundation, Right down the list, Democrats owned it. We even played the speeches last week. Do you remember Nancy Pelosi? Do you remember Obama? Beowulf, dig up those speeches because these... See, here's the problem. If we had a viable Republican candidate, a real conservative candidate, he'd be surging in the polls. He would never go on a Letterman show. He would never go on these left-wing setup programs because he would know better like I do. Moreover, he would plan a careful campaign in which he would run these tapes for 30 days around the election coming up next year. And he would say, remember what the Democrats did to America. He showed pictures of them, the bums in the street, show their noise, show their mayhem, show them attacking police, and then play these speeches. Play it, Beowulf. Oh, you don't have
I think it. this organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the...
You don't need the whole thing. You got the entire Democrat establishment from Obama and Pelosi down supporting the bums in the street. Now let's go back to the callers now that I've done my politics. 1-800-449-8255. Pittsburgh, PA. Hanny, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how you doing, Mr. Savage? I just want to say you really touched on a point when you were talking about the gentleman who said he saw the angel of death. My grandfather died of cancer almost about 2 years ago. And, I was born and raised a Muslim. And in our faith, we have this thing where as you get close to death, in our tradition, the veil is lifted and you see the other side. And so I remember, I was younger at that time, but I remember him looking around in the room and saying he saw the angel of death, and he didn't get up. He had cancer too, ironically or coincidentally. And it always stuck with me that he said he saw somebody else in the room, and then he passed away.
What is your faith? What is your faith?
Well, I'm a Muslim, sir.
But you believe in the angel of death?
Yes, sir.
Is that typical of all sects of Islam?
I'm a Sunni, so I can only speak on the Sunni sect. I don't know the other ones that well, but I can. Hmm. At least in our sect, we believe in the angel of death, that he comes, when your time comes, he's there in the room and he comes and takes your soul.
Mm. Well, it's not a pleasant topic, but I mean, it comes up. I mean, it's all around us, isn't it?
It stuck with me. I'll never forget to this day, just sitting there. And I always catch myself every once in a while.
Well, in my tradition, and I can't say I speak for anyone other than my own beliefs, we fight the angel of death. We tell him to go away and find someone else. We tell him not to bother us. We tell him to take a walk. And we fight death and we curse death to the end. How's that? What tradition is that called?
It's called the fighting spirit.
Yeah, I love all of the hippies here in Marin. Oh, yes, welcome death. He's your friend. Yeah, death is a transvestite who's going to take you to the promised land. Death is a beautiful thing. Don't fight it. Embrace it. You go take a nice walk with death and leave me alone, idiot. All of these peace-loving idiots are ready to roll over for any enemy that comes across their path. And some of us don't see the world that way. I'm sure you don't either, just because you know that they're there, right?
No, sir. The other thing that, like I said, I know me and you probably disagree on a lot of things, but one thing that I agree with you, 100%, my parents are also immigrants from Syria, and I can't imagine my parents. I can only imagine what my parents would do to me if they saw me in the street defecating and doing what these people are doing rather than...
Well, here's the thing about Muslims who listen to the Savage Nation. Believe me, and I know for a fact that I have a very large Muslim audience. On family values, on fiscal conservatism, on thrift, on how to raise children, my views are exactly their views, and they love me for it. In terms of Middle East policy, we will always disagree.
I agree with you as far as family values. You're absolutely right. When it comes to the values of this country, you hit it right on. Every time I hear you, it's like I'm listening to my dad talk. So that's why
that's
I love
right. So too. The only difference is that we have a dispute over the Middle East. And frankly, I'd rather leave the Middle East where it is and stick to America's problems instead of worrying about the Middle East's problems. To be honest with you, I'm sick of the Middle East between you and me. You know what I mean? Let Cain and Abel fight it out again and leave me out of it. That's why I'm here, not there. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. I don't know if you want to read it. We'll send it in a plain brown wrapper.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. And we're talking about various things, the Super Committee failure, the booing of Michelle Obama and NASCAR, a family story here and there, you know, that kind of thing. There was an obituary that I should mention in passing because he was a very, very interesting man. Teddy Faustman died. Many of you don't know who he is, but he died at age 71 of brain cancer yesterday. He was a very famous man in the media world, in the radio world in particular, in that he bought Citadel before it was bought by Cumulus. He bought it from ABC. And he also created a super agency, a sports, fashion, media. He built a company called IMG Worldwide. But he was well known because he applied the phrase, this man applied the phrase barbarians at the gate to his own style of naked financial greed, by the way. Incidentally, nothing, I mean, that's the way it is. That's what it was in those days. People were the way they were, and they are the same way today. And even in the final weeks of his life, as he was dying, Forstman blocked the coup from his sickbed, launched by Hollywood tycoon Michael Ovitz to trying to take control of the empire while Forstman battled cancer. That was his good friend Michael Ovitz. As he was dying of cancer, Ovitz tried to take, according to the New York Post, tried to take over his company. Ovitz, once a director there, was banished from ING in one of Forstman's last acts at its helm. And IMG, which is still controlled by his estate, is expected to appoint Forstman's handpicked successor, Michael Dolan, as chairman and CEO. You don't know much about this, but it's very interesting. It's a very interesting story. And you should try to read this story to see how people build things. It's never done nicely. Usually not done nicely. It's done ruthlessly. But here's the story of a guy dying of cancer, and one of his former directors tries to seize control of his empire while he's laying in a deathbed. Is anything new under the sun? No. Anyway, blessings to Teddy Faustman. I actually visited him at his home in Beverly Hills about 2 years ago. He was a dog lover, incidentally. And there's a couple of other interesting facts. The man was never married, but he adopted two young children in South Africa. He was a big supporter of Nelson Mandela many, many years ago. And when he went to South Africa to see Mandela, he adopted two children, two boys, African boys, who had they were orphans, and he raised them as his own children for the rest of their lives. Okay, this is a little-known story that should be told about the man. You could say barbarian at the gate, ruthless businessman, whatever you want to say. People are jealous of success to begin with. But, I mean, obviously he was a good man inside, you know, as well. I can't say that for people, some of the other people out there, like we don't have to mention names. Shall I mention a few? Anyway, just a little side note, you know, as I say, the angel is always out there waiting for someone. In this case, he had a little pickings here. Surprised he died at 71 of brain cancer. Actually caught me off guard because when I met him, I didn't even know he was sick. He didn't look sick to me. How do you know if someone's sick when they have an early stage of brain cancer? You don't even know, right? Anyway, let's move on. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage.com. Let's go to New York City. Marie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling from WOR. Go ahead, please.
I wish you were on 24/7.
I am. I wish you could tune a microphone into my brain. It would be running 24/7. It would be the most popular show in the world.
A couple of weeks ago, you were expressing a part of your book, and you were wondering if it was appropriate the way you had explained it.
Oh, you mean the sex scene between Jack and a girl and a woman?
Well, I'm a widow, and let me tell you, you made my night.
Well, it wasn't. There was nothing, you know, inherently vulgar or pornographic about it.
No.
It was just two people having a very, very a passionate moment together.
It was wonderful. I thought. I enjoyed every minute.
Well, good. I'm doing market research for the next installment of Jack Hatfield. We have to find out just exactly how erotic to make some of the scenes.
And I wanted to tell you, the gentleman that called about Angel of Death, I'm a nurse, and mm-hmm. I have seen many people cross over, and there's just something about that last moment that they have. They know it's coming, and mm-hmm. it's really a very beautiful thing.
Beautiful in what way, Marie?
They're not struggling. They're at peace. Apparently, they say you see the light, and it must be that light. I lost my husband.
I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I watch a show on cable called I Survived, where people died, and they came back. They were close to death or something like that. and well, they had a heart attack and they were dead for 4 minutes, 6 minutes, and they saw their relatives or they saw all sorts of light. And then one guy said, listen to this, that he saw his dog, a dog that he had, who he loved so badly, who died in the year 2000, and he kept trying to reach out for the dog, and the dog was across the field, and he couldn't touch him. And then they snapped him back. The doctors pulled him back from death. That was an interesting story.
I don't know. It's just...
You know what I'm saying? So if you say... See, the reason I mention that is that it tends to take away from that there really is the other world and the relatives are waiting. I mean, it's just a hallucination maybe toward the end.
I don't
know. Or maybe... Wait, let's put it this way. Maybe nature set us up in our evolution. Let's take away God for a minute. Maybe the natural order of things is such... that was supposed to have peace at the last moment.
True. I agree.
You know? In other words, maybe inherent in the biological clock is that when the last second sweeps over the hand, the last sweep of the second hand, you do achieve some sort of peace because you're supposed to.
Well, my husband had gotten a clean bill of health 3 days before he passed.
Of what? What did he die of? I'm sorry?
It was... heart arrhythmia.
Yeah, that's a tough one to control. You can't control it. The heart goes into arrhythmia. It's impossible unless you're in a hospital setting.
Exactly.
Had he had a previous heart condition?
Nothing.
Oh, great. Now tell me he was 52 and he was a runner and he took vitamin E. That's what I want to hear next.
No, he was 71. He worked every day.
Now, I love the stories when I always grope when I hear someone died of this or that, some weird death. I said, well, he smoked, right? No. He drank a lot? No. Worried a lot? No. Matter of fact, he took 16 vitamins a day and he exercised regularly and he watched his cholesterol. I love hearing that story.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He took Lipitor, but, you know, he loved to eat. I'm Italian and he would eat anything I put in front of him.
Well, that must have been fun.
Well, he was.
In other words, he had a lust for life, right?
Yes, he was a good man.
He had a lust for life, which is why you like Jack Hatfield in the lovemaking scene, because it showed a man with a lust for life, right, Marie? Marie, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to send you a free copy of Abuse of Power so you can send it to another relative of yours for Christmas. Oh, I don't want to talk about a super committee. Don't want to talk about it. I read that the military cut. Obama says he's not going to automatically preserve the military. You know, I have a mixed feeling about it. I'm a big national security person, and I know that Obama's cut the military to the bone, almost like Jimmy Carter did. But we also know there's an awful lot of fat in every budget. I don't care what the budget is. I don't care what department it is. And we also know the level of graft and corruption in departments exist. Why does it not exist amongst contractors in the military? And so if I heard a government say, you know what, I will cut the military, but I will not cut it in essential weapons, but I'm going to look at every contract, and we're cutting 10% off every contract, take it or leave it. Now, what's wrong with that? You know, I meant to bring a magazine to work today. I forgot to tell you this. You're not going to believe this story. I read a variety of magazines, and one of them is a shipping magazine about commercial shipping. So I read it on passing a small column in that magazine that a United States naval ship, it's an ammunition ship, floats around and it brings ammo, dry storage ammo, to ships, right? And it went into a yard for repairs, a very major upgrade, in Cameron Bay in Vietnam. And I said, wait a minute, something's wrong with this picture. Why is the U.S. Navy taking a naval warship to Cameron Bay and giving the communist government of Cameron Bay a contract to do work on one of our naval ships? And it made no sense to me. After all, we have naval bases around the world. We have a major naval presence in Honolulu, for God's sakes. Why are we giving contracts to the communist government in Vietnam to repair our Navy ships? I'll go to the next step. Then I say, wait a minute, don't we have our own electricians, pipe fitters, plumbers, welders? Doesn't the Navy have men who can do that anymore? Are we going to read tomorrow that the military is outsourcing the repair of jets to China because it's cheaper? Yes. Yes, with Madeleine Albright as a lobbyist for China, with Sandy Berger as a lobbyist for China, the last I checked, with Bob Dole, the last I checked, as a lobbyist for China, with too many people from the highest levels of government acting as lobbyists for China, and the corruption within the U.S. military, especially at the contracting side, we could wake up one day and read that the U.S. government has quietly agreed to permit the Chinese Navy to supply officers for our ships because they're willing to work for far less money and we have to do cost savings. Anything is possible when you have this level of greed and insanity. At least in my opinion, it's one man's opinion. Let's go to the callers right now in the Savage Nation. Houston, Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, from a proud father of two successful adult children that I helped to raise with my bride of 34 years.
Bless you.
The UC Davis protesters were...
Yeah, the poor innocent pepper-sprayed children who'll be crying over the Thanksgiving turkey. They'll be having their tofu turkey, and the red diaper dopa baby parents will tell them to tell the whole story to the family about how they were assaulted by the police.
But they were obstructing a police vehicle coming to pick up an arrested protester, and the officer in charge warned each of them individually that they were subject to use of force if they did not move away.
Oh, we didn't see the police cruiser trying to get through. All we saw were them linking arms as taught to them by the vermin communists from Oakland's ruckus camp.
Well, I saw a video of that on YouTube that...
Oh, well, that part of the video is not being shown. It shows the poor, innocent children sitting around on their behinds, linking their arms, singing, "We shall overcome."
Correct.
And being sprayed by the evil policemen.
We're told they were going to be deploying paintball guns, but they didn't do that. They just sprayed them and dusted them with a little pepper.
Why didn't they just haul them away, throw a rope around them and haul them away like cattle?
Why
don't they just bring in some cowboys from the agricultural division of UC Davis and haul them away? I am sick of this. I am sick of everyone coddling these communist anarchist brats. I'm sick of it. The officer is a hero for only using pepper spray on him.
I agree. It showed extreme restraint.
You're damn right. These people are out of control. So now the top campus cop is on leave, and the president is appalled. Mr. Udoff is afraid of losing his job. He's appalled over the pepper spraying of the poor, innocent children. Poor, innocent children. Yeah, all right. Well, there you go. That's the communist left-wing vermin media that we have showing a piece of the picture. They show you the snapshot, not the movie. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, what's in the news? You got all the news you need. You got John Corzine disappearing along with the fact that $1.2 billion in investor money has disappeared. We'll have to see whether it's another Madoff or there's an honest explanation for it. A poor kid, two people forgot to pay for a sandwich in Safeway about 4 weeks ago. Very poor white people with a kid. She was 9 months pregnant. They went into Safeway. They just moved to Hawaii. They bought $50 worth of groceries. They had bought two sandwiches and eaten one of them. They're checking out. They forget to pay for the sandwiches. They are arrested and their child taken away by protective custody for a $2.50 sandwich they didn't pay for. And here's $1.2 billion missing. And there's no word of where John Corzine is on this. Isn't it amazing? It shows you why people clamor to get into politics. Just put a D or an R next to your name and virtually anything is possible. You know, I've been watching a TV show that I didn't like last year that I like a lot this year. I've gotten used to Steve Buscemi as the character in Boardwalk Empire. It's actually my favorite show now. Strangely enough, it got better. A, the violence is superbly real. B, Buscemi's become realistic as he actually looks like the guy who ran Atlantic City at that time. If you look at the research, that's why they picked him. But he does it perfectly. I love the costumes, the clothing, the men's suits are beautiful. The settings are gorgeous, but the directing is amazing. The cinematography, if you get HBO, I know most of you don't. I was going to cancel it because of that rat, but I don't watch him anyway, so what's the difference? I said, I'm going to deny myself some movies and some good shows because of that bum that they got to push his perverted politics? Nah. Anyway, I really enjoy the series, but the point is they show you the corruption of politicians in that time of America. It's no different today. They take a case where he's in for political corruption all the way up to the attorney general to try and get it out of state court up to federal court because they own the guy who's attorney general. And then the attorney general, for political reasons, turns against this guy. And the way they get the attorney general to agree to turn against this old friend in Atlantic City is by saying, you and your friends have just appointed someone to run Veterans Affairs. And if you do what we want you to do with him, we'll let you pillage the Veterans Affairs Department. The word pillage is the operational word. I said, has anything ever changed? Yes. Never before in American history has the corruption and graft been so nakedly engaged in. Of course it's always been a part of the political process. Of course it has been. There's no golden time where it didn't exist. Man is inherently corrupt and evil. That's what laws are for. That's what keeps man in line. Okay? So it's always been a part and parcel of the political process. But in my reading and my living in America for a fairly long time, I've never seen such naked corruption. Never in my life. Solyndra, $550 million. Guy gets up, the secretary, David Chu, I don't know where the money went, and I'm sorry. That's all. That's enough. Mea culpa, goodbye. I'm sorry? How about going to jail? Here are your handcuffs, Dr. Chu. Hot Chu, Dr. Chu. Goodbye. You're indicted. You didn't steal the money, but you may as well have let them steal the money. Goodbye, Dr. Chu. Bye-bye. No, instead, gets up in a congressional hearing, another fake congressional hearing. He don't know where the money went, and he's sorry, it won't happen again. Then the next day we read it happened again and again and again. It's still happening. One after the other, in the tens of billions of dollars, missing, disappeared, given to cronies. All under Obama. And the reason you don't read much about it is you know why. Because the midstream media, which hates everything that we believe in. Father, mother, family, church, flag, patriotism, guns, you name it, they hate it. They don't talk about these things, do they? Instead, they attack poor Herman Cain, and then they say they're not racist. If you ever wanted to see proof positive how racist the white media is, look at how they nakedly attack Herman Cain with a glee that I've never seen. In other words, it's one thing to do it intelligently and show his shortcomings, which they never do with Obama, incidentally, but to try and pick him apart and show a shortcoming, but no, they enjoy it. You watch them picking on this black man, and you could see the racist streaks running through like the red tide in August. Okay, let's put it to you that way. The fact of the matter is I've never seen such naked corruption and naked racism as I'm seeing now in the government media complex. Never. Which is why tomorrow, assuming the angel of death doesn't visit me... I'm sorry. I'm in a very weird mood these days. Assuming she takes a walk and goes somewhere else. If I'm back on the air tomorrow, I'm going to talk about Turkey, I think, for the rest of the week. Nah, I'm not going to. I don't know. The news is so strong. It's overwhelming. I mean, Thanksgiving's a beautiful time. It's my favorite holiday. My whole family is together Thursday. I'm looking forward to that. What does it actually mean? Family's together. It means a lot. Why? Because it means a lot. It's a tradition. So if you're a religious person, you have traditions that go back thousands of years or longer. If you're an American family, Thanksgiving is probably the most unifying of all holidays, no matter what your race, creed, or color may be. Everybody loves Thanksgiving. And if you meet anyone who doesn't, recommend that they go to Occupy Wall Street the next time it meets, because that's where they all meet. Anyone who hates Thanksgiving belongs in an Occupy movement, as you well understand, because they are the people who hate everything. It's been fun. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are some disturbing stories out there right now. A radical Muslim terrorist was arrested in New York City over the weekend by the NYPD, yet the FBI refuses to pursue the radical Muslim bomber in New York City, reported by the AP. Why is that? Even though the FBI knew what he was up to, do you trust the FBI to prevent the next terrorist attack? Do you fear that under Obama, the FBI has become an extension of the ACLU? What is it about the New York City Police Department which seems to make them so much more effective at stopping terrorism than the federal government? And here's good news for those of you who love freedom. In a landslide election over the weekend, Spain rejected socialists and the socialist government and elected a right-wing conservative government. Now only 3% of Europe lives under a left-wing government. And here in America, living under a 100% socialist left-wing government. So as Europe is turning its back on socialism, do you think America is going to go in that direction or re-embrace Obama's socialism? A Democratic congressman from Michigan has been accused of sexual abuse. Why do you believe the media is so much more focused on sex abuse in the Catholic Church in Penn State than in the case of a sitting U.S. congressman? Is it because he's a Democrat? One of the gutter rats in Occupy Wall Street has been arrested with a loaded gun. Don't you believe the occupiers will begin violent armed attacks soon? Finally, what do you dread most about getting together with your family this Thanksgiving? Do you look forward to anything? And what is your worst Thanksgiving horror story? The main story, of course, is whatever you want to make it, but the fact that the FBI declined to pursue the New York City terrorist bomb plot by a Muslim, a convert to Islam, could be a reflection of the FBI's ACLU mentality. Has the FBI become an extension of the ACLU? Do you feel safer with Obama as president? Here's a man who is an Al-Qaeda sympathizer. He's been accused of wanting to bomb police stations, post offices, and kill U.S. troops who came back from the Middle East. Now the FBI says he was mentally unstable and he really couldn't pull off the alleged plot. Can you believe this? According to the NYPD, they tried to get the FBI involved at least twice as their undercover investigation of Jose Pimentel unfolded. Both times, the FBI concluded that he wasn't a serious threat, they said. The FBI concluded that 27-year-old Pimentel didn't have the predisposition or the ability to do anything on his own, one of the officials said. Does that mean that the FBI is now going to act as a defense witness or defense for the prosecution? Does this now mean that the FBI will act to defend Pimentel? Remember, the unemployed convert to Islam was doing some pretty amazing things. He was putting the bomb together, according to New York Police Department's Kelly. He was drilling holes, and it would not have been appropriate for us to let him walk out the door with that bomb. He was cutting off the heads of matches to make an explosive device. He had bought an alarm clock to attach to it. Pimentel, also known as Mohammed Yusuf, was denied bail. The bearded Muslim smiled at times during the proceeding. His own mother said that he had become crazy since he converted to Islam and started to read the Quran. Asked why federal authorities were not involved in the case, Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance Jr. said there was communication with them, but his office felt that given the timeline, it was appropriate to proceed under state charges without the FBI. This is not the first time this has been done. It's been done over and over and over again. Americans must understand that we're in great danger under Barack Hussein Obama, who has been gelded by the radical left. It's a shocking thing to see this. Super failure. Failure of the FBI. TSA worker sexually assaults woman. Border Patrol agent put in jail for manhandling a marijuana smuggler. Is the federal government turning against the people? Who does it represent? Itself?
Occupy Wall Street.
We're here with Femin US in solidarity with Femin of the Ukraine to represent the 99% of this world and demand justice for the 99%.
free Wall Street right now. This is our territory. We were here first. These people have no message. They certainly don't have a message that belongs here. It belongs in Washington.
Are you a mobster?
And we feel like people should go to Washington and bring their complaints, not to New York City, and affect everyone's way of life. There are thousands of people here waiting to go to work. They have to show an ID to walk down the street because of these idiots. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I work right down here.
Yeah, we have jobs. We have jobs. Yeah, get a job.
Yeah, work.
Today's your day off.
No, go to work.
No, you got a day off. It's a holiday.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Today is actually a holiday. You can't go to work.
Really?
It's a holiday.
John, you have all your
things? It doesn't matter.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Now let's go to michaelsavage.com. Here's your lucky day. This is your very, very lucky day on the Savage Nation. Abuse of Power, almost sold out. First printing, almost gone. You're going to buy it for the holidays. Do yourself a favor. Buy your rare first printing while copies last. It's a novel you'll never forget. It's all about the next 9/11, stopped by one honest American. Abuse of Power. Al-Qaeda sympathizer arrested in terror plot. Sometimes fiction, well, and reality are one and the same. Take a look at the picture of the Occupy protester busted with handgun and ammo. Take a look at the earrings he's wearing. You'll see what's going on in this country. Oh, yes, the NASCAR crowd that booed Michelle Obama. Turned ugly for Michelle Obama and the second first lady, or the second lady, Jill Biden. They introduced the NASCAR race and the crowd booed them. Government says they weren't booing them. They were booing the fact that they had to wait online to get in. American spies have been outed in Lebanon. The CIA is liable to lose these spies. Military probes, Memorial Cross at Camp Pendleton. Romney tries to prove he can win without actually being wanted by anybody. New poll says few in Iowa committed to a GOP candidate. I wonder why. Hazmat crew removes 200 pounds of feces at Occupy site in Santa Cruz. Can you believe this? Where in the world is Obama, asks The Hill. Well, I think he's on vacation with the first lady and the mother-in-law. If it's cold in Washington right now. The president was in Hawaii while the super committee hit stall speed. What is this about? Throughout his term, Obama has avoided leading on the issue of fiscal responsibility. He walks away from his own commission. Now, in a week when leadership was needed, where is he? In Bali, on vacation. Like House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, he sees no need to move in this direction. He doesn't want to cut back on anything. He just wants to raise taxes. Expanding government, that's the old tried and true method, tax and spend. Tax and spend, tax and spend. Also on michaelsavage.com today, God help us all, Gingrich tops Romney in an Iowa poll. As I said the other day, I cannot believe that a few overweight farmers in Iowa are going to tell me who's going to be the next president. And by the way, if they can tell me who is going to be the next president, I don't even want to vote. Napolitano ignores subpoena for illegal immigrant data. No kidding. One of the Occupy Wall Street leaders was caught staying at a $700 a night hotel with goose down pillows. And by the way, he's a bond trader. He did this as his day job. Tide is turning against communists. Spain's conservatives won an overwhelming victory. Oh, by the way, Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Arab Spring, first new leader. And Islamists calling for a caliphate throughout the Middle East. Which side are they on? 1-800-449-8255. UK permits Sikhs to wear daggers at Olympics. Retired cop told to remove 9/11 flag from his condo. Professor says Chinese illegals may now overtake the flow from Mexico. Muslim goat sacrifice blocked in Florida. Oh, it's sad. It's heartbreaking. Poor innocent goats. They look like my dog, Teddy. I can't even look at it. I don't think I want to eat a turkey. I'm going to eat a tofu turkey. All this and more today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
officials have released a list on 93 complaints against the protesters. The complaints include drug and alcohol use, littering, and bathing in county bathrooms. Artwork has also been vandalized, but county officials can't link that to protesters. Now, the most shocking accusation is that officials found 200 pounds of human feces near the County Veterans Memorial Building, which is just across the street from from the camp.
I remember when I was a young biology student at Queens College, you know, little peon in the classroom, and our heroes were Watson and Crick, going back to, wow, another age. They uncoiled the double helix of DNA. So they were the heroes, even though allegedly they ripped it off from a lab assistant, a woman assistant, a radiological specialist, who I'm sorry to tell you, I forget her name, but it was her X-ray crystallography that I think actually deciphered the double helix, if I remember correctly. It's 50 years ago, so forgive me. So anyway, I'm a young undergrad, you know, mediocre student at best, very bad interest, and I was interested in things, but I was a bad student. So our heroes were Watson and Crick, but when one of them won the Nobel Prize, and I think it was Watson, I don't know which, they showed him at Cambridge when he's giving a lecture and a student comes up and says, "Sir, you've just won the Nobel Prize." And he says with the then very famous British, you know, understatement, he says, "Yes, thank you." And he goes on with his lecture. No popping of champagne, no hoorays, no celebrations. And he went on with his life, and because that's the way he was. As a matter of fact, Watson was recently fired from Cold Spring Harbor, wasn't he? For saying something politically incorrect about 5 years ago, didn't he say something equivalent to Rick's Rock? I mean, didn't they try to smear him with the Rick's Rock thing? Yeah, say they take a great man like that, a great scientist like that, says one wrong word, and he gets thrown out of Cold Spring Harbor, thrown out of science, because you know, we're living in a terrible age. By the way, we're not living in the age of enlightenment anymore. Not with Obama. He introduced the age of something else. He didn't bring in the age of enlightenment. Let's be clear. Obama ushered in another age. I haven't defined yet what it is. But it's not the age of enlightenment. I think the age of enlightenment ended a long time ago, long before Obama. But this man did not bring in the age of progressivism either. He brought in the age of something much different. Some would say the age of tyranny. But he's so good at it, so silk smooth at it, you don't even know that you're being put into the chair. You don't even know you're being strapped into the chair or strapped onto the gurney. He's so smooth at it, you're putting your hands into the cuffs. He is so smooth at it, you're taking the bagel on the way into the boxcar. He's so smooth at it, you're saying could have another smear of cream cheese on the way into the boxcar. But all right, you don't want to know that. You want to live in a dream world because you can go buy a green tie, red tie, yellow tie. You can buy a red car, blue car, yellow car. You can buy a big car, small car, medium car. You can buy an SUV, an LEV, an LSMFT, and you think you're free. You're not free. You're a slave. You are a slave, and I don't mean a wage slave. That's been said a long time ago. You are a slave of your own views of progressivism. You don't even understand what you're talking about when you think that Obama is a progressive. But again, I don't want to go there. I wanted to talk about Amanda Knox, and the abuse of power of the British and American governments. But all roads lead back to the same abusiveness. At the end of the day, all roads lead back to the abuse of a government. And it's a very frightening thing to say. Here I was, a man who had never committed a crime, never appeared as a defendant in a criminal trial, never accused of an actual crime, and yet I was put on a list with Russian skinheads in prison for murdering 10 immigrants, put on a list with a Hamas murderer who executed two Jewish parents and crushed in the head of their 4-year-old daughter with a rifle butt. Why was I put on a list with these criminals without a trial? Amanda Knox was given a trial and an appeal. I wasn't even given a trial by the people who invented the Magna Carta. So again, I'm harping on that old story. You're bored of it, aren't you? Banned in Britain. But you didn't really care about my book, Banned in Britain, or about my story being banned in Britain, because you didn't hear about it, read about it, see about it, talk about it. So I said, all right, the only way to reach the American people is through a novel. Do you realize what a long shot just came in for me? Do you have any idea, if you're a betting man, what this is? The guy feels he has a grudge against the government that did this to him, He writes a nonfiction book, and a couple of thousand people. He has a radio show. No one really cares. It's forgotten, buried. Old story, gone. So the guy says, I'll tell you what, I'll fictionalize the story to show what's really going on. And all of a sudden, the book is on the New York Times bestseller list as a fiction, as a story. It's unheard of. When have you heard of a political man writing a fictionalized book about a plight he has who hits it so high on a New York Times bestseller list? When have you ever heard about this? I don't think I've heard about it. There may be a few cases. A few ideas come to mind, but not in fiction. I mean, Emile Zola wrote a book, but he didn't fictionalize it in order to trumpet the cause of someone who had been falsely condemned for a crime he didn't commit. I think he has a descendant, this guy, who's a bad movie actor. I forget his name. Dreyfus. The world's worst actor in history. But the Dreyfus affair, man sent to Devil's Island for a crime he didn't commit, railroaded by the French government. No one ever heard of him. Nobody would do a thing for him. And then Emile Zola went to his defense, but he didn't write a novel. He just started to talk about it, and then he got him, you know, got him off. And he got Dreyfus back to the military. Nobody went to my defense. So here I am, still doing it. You want me to tell you what my age is? I can guarantee you'd be shocked to find out that men half my age don't have my energy. Why? What motivates me? I have no idea. I don't know. My quest for personal justice, personal freedom, supersedes even my sense of safety. Do you know that? Do you hear what I just said to you? That's a pretty amazing statement. Because if you're not willing to speak out, you are already a slave.
Savage.
Okay, super failure. The super committee could not come up with a debt deal. They couldn't cut any money out of the budget. Now, what's going to happen if the massive defense cuts are put into place? Well, joining us with their opinion right now is Mackenzie Eaglin, a National Security Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Mackenzie Eaglin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's good to be on the show again.
Well, since the super committee won't come to a consensus, what's going to happen to defense spending?
If the super committee fails, which Washington is largely expecting this to happen, a whole lot of chaos and uncertainty ensues, and there will be no one who feels this more than the U.S. military. Part of the reason is this so-called trigger option or sequestration, meaning if Congress can't find cuts and agree on them, or the president, you know, doesn't accept them, the budgets are automatically cut in the future. But that future is the following January, not even January 2012. And so that means we're going to see high noon Mexican standoff between the House and the Senate, the House and the White House, and everybody all next year. This would really grind Washington to a halt. And if you think it's bad already, and it already has ground to a halt, you can only imagine what I'm talking about that ensues if they can't make a deal.
Well, we all agree we need a strong national defense. But really, how much money do we really need? How much of this is fat and corruption?
I would argue it's never been more important, particularly in a post-Cold War world with a military that is incredibly tired after 10 years of war. Their equipment is worn out. The threats we are facing and the risks relative to those threats are only growing. And Washington, under President Obama's leadership, has been slashing the military's budget since the day he took office. He runs around supporting the troops and trying to promote jobs for veterans and saying he's doing all the right things, but it's the numbers and the budgets just don't add up. You can't cut a force that's still in harm's way. This president has surged twice in Afghanistan. He started an air war over Libya. He's even sent army troops to fight the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda and Africa just last month. The numbers and the reality are completely disconnected, which is, I guess, classic Washington. But you can do great damage. You can actually break an all-volunteer force. You know, we had a draft until the end of the Vietnam War. This is a big experiment, you know, to cut defense budgets with a force that volunteers to serve. They're highly professional and combat-hardened. And you can break them if you cut too far too fast.
We're in a very bad financial situation in this nation. So why shouldn't we cut defense spending?
Look, federal spending across the board is out of control. I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, we're going to stare at Greece as our future if we don't fix this problem. The thing about the defense budget is that since it's been cut for the last 3 years, it's contributed significant amounts of money to debt reduction already. Other domestic federal agencies have been squeezed a little, but remember, they're coming off of this cut after having a stimulus bill that pumped, you know, $500 billion into these other agencies. So their cuts now are relative to the massive growth that they've received. You know, and the defense budget at best needs to tread water today, you know, at a minimum. And of course it's not. It continues to fall in every metric, in dollars as a percentage of our economy and as a percentage of the federal budget. At some point, Washington has to evaluate if this is really a good policy to fund the military through booms and busts. Do you really save any money? We did this in the 90s. We do it after every war, at least in the last century, but particularly in the 90s, we slashed the military, in some cases by 50%. And this decade, we found troops didn't have enough body armor. They lacked the up-armored vehicles to combat roadside bombs in Iraq. They couldn't prosecute Iraq and Afghanistan well at the same time, so we had to ramp up defense spending. How much did we really save, in quotes, from all those cuts in the 90s? I think there needs to be a focus on the two-thirds of the federal budget that are on an unsustainable cost growth trajectory, which are the big three entitlements. There is no other way to ensure our national security and our fiscal solvency without that. And the greatest irony about this debt ceiling deal is that the trigger only cuts the one-third of the budget that's considered discretionary, of which the military is included.
What kind of damage would major defense cuts do, in your opinion?
The Secretary of Defense has been painting quite a dire picture of these levels of additional defense cuts, because remember, they're coming on top of 3 years of defense capabilities and dollars and other types of cuts. So that's the point one. Debt ceiling trigger cuts would come on top of 3 years of rolling defense cuts. It's a force that is facing a readiness crisis in terms of equipment breaking down more often and more across the services, training being scaled back, whether that's flying hours or whatever. And even in terms of retention of service members, particularly mid-grade officers and NCOs, senior NCOs, and then military education. That's all what's happening now. You pile on the kinds of defense cuts that Congress is considering under the trigger, and you will break the force. But even as equally bad is that you will fundamentally alter America's role in the world, our global leadership position, by default, through the back door. There won't be any national discussion or debate about this, but literally we will have a military that can obviously do less things less well around the world every day.
You mean there's nowhere we can cut back in defense? Absolutely nowhere?
Well, since there have been so many defense cuts already, regardless of what you thought about them in the past, we have to acknowledge all of the cuts that have happened to date. What's left are really items that are generally needed. There are areas to always do better, to operate more efficiently, to get rid of overhead and bureaucracy. You know, I've long said that the Department of Defense civilian workforce, all of these tend to be very smart, highly professional people, but it is almost 800,000 people large. It's grown much higher than the rate of the active duty military since 9/11. I think this workforce is an area that's ripe for examination for potential defense cuts going forward.
Instead of cutting in defense, where else can we cut? I mean, you would argue that we should cut in night basketball, okay? I understand that, and I'm in support of national defense, but let's be clear. There's always bloat in a budget.
Well, actually, even within the defense budget, you know, the single largest driver of personnel costs, of which about half of the total defense budget goes to paying people, the single largest driver of personnel costs in DOD's budget is healthcare, which tracks with the national economy, except that defense healthcare outpaces national healthcare cost growth by 3 times. I think that the Pentagon has got to get its arms around this huge problem, you know, to put, you know, healthcare for service members and their family on a sound financial future path, because otherwise you're only going to end up cutting benefits if you don't figure out what's wrong and fix it. and there's not any more money coming, you know, something's going to give, and you don't want that to be quality health care for troops and their families.
Well, anyway, Mackenzie Eaglin, thanks for joining us today with your opinions on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was so good talking to you. Go ahead and send your listeners to heritage.org for more information.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
There is a concerted effort across this country to limit, to suppress, and to undo our right to vote. It is deliberate and it is by design. The franchise is under attack today in this country. A certain predetermined segment of Americans are being targeted. Young people, the elderly, our disabled, and our minorities will all feel the repercussions of this concerted effort. These are the tactics that have been used for years to compromise the franchise. What we called a poll tax 50 years ago is now having to buy a voter ID card today.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com. 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. I feel better not eating shrimp. I feel like it's a milestone in my life. I was addicted to shrimp. I have to admit it. I know it's a big thing to admit things on radio. I'm sorry to admit that I was a shrimp addict. I kicked it on my own. I cold turkeyed on shrimp. I know this is not as good as Glenn Beck admitting he was an alcoholic or someone saying that they were something addicted to something. It sells today. Doesn't it say you're an addict? I was a shrimp addict. In fact, it's my next book. It's going to be entitled I Was a Shrimp Addict by Michael Savage. I went into shrimp rehab and I came out a better man. No longer do I suffer that embarrassment of eating shrimp behind closed doors. No longer do I have this love affair with the crustacean. No longer do I fear that the legs and the tail and the head will suddenly appear in my eyes. No longer am I cursed with the shame of being a shrimp addict. But since I've given up shrimp, I swear my joints are better. It's not, if you like it, good luck to you. The Jews won't eat a shrimp. I mean, most Jews do. I mean, the Orthodox won't, because it's banned by the Bible. A lot of things are banned by the Bible. People do it. So, and what does that have to do with anything? But the shellfish and the pig are two big no-nos. Do Muslims eat shrimp? I see them in restaurants knocking down almost everything now. They have the holy robes on, but they eat pretty good. They don't have the same restrictions as the Orthodox Jews. Oh, they won't go into an unkosher restaurant. That's their belief. They're entitled. So how could a Muslim who follows the same laws with regard to pig, no pork, how come he can fress in restaurants? He sit there eating, knocking down food. How do they do that? I mean, at least the Orthodox Jew won't go into an unkosher restaurant. They're not hypocrites. It's not kosher. They don't go in it. They won't eat on a dish that had dairy on it if they're eating meat, and they won't eat meat if there's on a dairy. So how come the Muslim who so holy, they won't eat, I won't touch a pork product, how can they eat in a restaurant like everyone else with the hat on, with the hajib? How does that work? Can a Muslim call a show and explain to me, other than pork and alcohol, what else are you restricted from? Can you eat shrimp? Or did you also pick up the Jewish prohibition against shrimp? Or was that dropped by the time Muhammad came around? Because they didn't have refrigerators. And even when Muhammad came around, it was later already, but they still didn't have ice. The Iceman did not yet cometh to Mecca at that time. So they could not have, you know what I'm saying? They could not have like freed up the restriction on shrimp. Why is it that Jews, once they like leave their religion, the first thing they do is eat ham sandwiches and get shrimp cocktail? They're obsessed with it. The first thing they want the minute they eschew their religion is a shrimp cocktail and a pork sausage. I don't understand that. It's sort of like an overreaction to the freedom. Yes, I'm a liberated Jew. I no longer follow the protocols of my fathers. I enjoy a shrimp cocktail. Yes, I eat sausage. I'm a modern person. Not very often. I do have a ham sandwich, it is true, but I'm a modern person. I'm not restricted as my father was. You know, people like to throw. They don't want to do what their father did. What if your father was right on certain things? You have to throw it out? I mean, did your grandfather smoke pot? Your grandfather came over on the boat. Did he smoke pot the day he got here because he was liberated from wherever he came from? That's the first thing he wanted to do the day he got here was smoke marijuana. He could not wait to leave the old country so he can become a junkie. The first thing he wanted was to become a junkie in America. He could not wait to get here. How come he didn't need marijuana in order to get through life and build a family? You know you're not going to build a family. You know most of you potheads don't have children, and if you do, you ruined your families. That's number one. Number two, you're going to leave a horrible legacy. Maybe the most you've ever done is destroy people in a court of law because the judges are as stoned as you are. But other than that, I mean, what can you do on marijuana? Nothing. Nothing. It's the most dangerous of all drugs because it is a gateway drug. Never forget it. Now, having said all of that, and explain the chemical poisons in marijuana, which went right over your head because you think it's a part of your religion. Marijuana is to the pothead what the cross is to the Christian. And what the Bible is to the Jew, marijuana is to the pothead. They will not, they defend it, they get angry, they'll burn down you. If you say one word about Mary Jane, they go crazy. That shows you that they're addicted to it, and it's very unhealthy. It's a very unhealthy addiction. But I've read all of the toxins in marijuana, and I'm not going to do it again. I did it once, twice, three, four, five times today, and I think you got the message. You know that ammonia was found in mainstream marijuana smoke at levels up to 20-fold greater than that found in tobacco, but you won't accept it. You're against cigarettes, rightly so. I don't smoke. Killed my father. But you, oh, marijuana, it's natural. It's good for me. Hydrogen cyanide, you're going to argue, is good for you? No. Aromatic amines, which are carcinogenic, found in marijuana smoke at concentrations 3 to 5 times those found in tobacco smoke, and you're going to argue that it's healthful for you? There's no argument. So immediately you start in with, well, alcohol's no good either. But that's not the point. I'm not telling you to go out and become a drunk. How about becoming clean for a day and not lean on any crutch, alcohol or marijuana? Try to get through a day without a prescription drug or an illegal drug. Try it for 3 days. See if you're not an addict. Give yourself the savage test. Don't have a beer. Don't have a joint. Don't have a prescription drug for 3 days. And if you can't do that, you're a drug addict one way or the other. I don't care whether you're taking it from Wyeth or from Pfizer. You're a drug addict. Most of America are now most Americans are drug addicted. It's a drug-addicted nation, which is why the politicians are no better than the people. They're just like the people, drug addicts, which is why we have to have drug tests for anyone in Congress. Any political office must pass a drug test. Look, you take drug tests if you go to work for a company. You must. You have to pee in a cup. Why shouldn't a congressman pee in a cup? I mean, if Congressman Weiner had to pee in a cup, God forbid the imagery, if he had to pee in a cup prior to become running for Congress, he wouldn't have been elected probably. You don't know what people are taking, whether it's prescription or otherwise, and you should know. These people hold the keys to the future in their hands, whether it be through appropriations committees, military committees, social committees. They're determining whether we will not survive or survive, and that's why we're dying. Because I will wager a bet that a far higher percentage than you may fear of legislators are stoned out of their mind, either on prescription drugs or on illegal substances, and there's no drug testing for them. Why is that so? Why should they be exempt from drug testing? This is a very big campaign issue, by the way, that somebody should run on. Drug testing for all politicians. See how that sells on both sides of the aisle. The wide stance in the stall side, that's the Republican side, or the... You remember him? Who was that guy with the wide stance in the stall who got... Larry Craig, they threw him out the next second, right? You got to hand it to big mouth liberals, though. They don't go quietly into the good night. They scream all the way out of the door. He didn't let go right away. He was like a breech berth, that one, Anthony Weiner. He didn't shut up the whole way out the door. He didn't have the dignity to leave right away. And what was about the last conference was the most embarrassing. He dressed up like he was going to a wedding. He thought it was an acceptance speech. The guy is such a whack job that Anthony Weiner gave a speech like, and I want to thank my parents for the values they instilled in me. This is a guy resigning for having sent pictures of a Schmendrick to the whole world on BlackBerry. The guy got caught sending naked pictures of himself, and he says, I want to thank my parents for the values that they instilled in me. What? What was he on? I have no idea. How could a man give a speech like, it was like an acceptance speech. And I want to thank my fifth grade teacher for all of the, such a hardworking teacher for instilling values in me so I know how to take pictures of my private parts and send them out to the entire world. I want to thank especially Mr. Katzman, who was my photography teacher in the seventh grade in PS 14. Thank you, Mr. Katzman, for teaching me how to use a camera, especially very hard angles. Unbelievable what a speech that was. And he dressed up as though he was going to a wedding, as I say. New shirt. A new Robert Hall suit he got for the occasion. Couldn't he have just submitted a letter of resignation saying, I resign because I'm a dirtbag and I'm embarrassed. I embarrassed my family and my friends and Congress. Why did he give a speech that went on for 20 minutes? Answer, deranged. Which showed that he never should have been elected to begin with. But it's Brooklyn and Queens. They dance to a different drummer. People in Brooklyn and Queens have a totally different view of the world than you do. If you can grift it, they grift it. If you can vote in Brooklyn, Queens, and in Florida, that's even better yet. Because you're getting over on the man. If you can collect welfare in Queens, Brooklyn, Puerto Rico, and Boca Raton, better yet. Because you're getting over on the man. What are you kidding? They robbed plenty. I'm entitled to it. Don't ask me. Are you kidding what they rob? What they rob with the wars? I'm supposed to worry about it? What they rob over there, those evil Republicans? I'll take whatever I can get. Don't tell me what I can do.
Savage.